Good evening, Darby, from God's own city of Glasgow. Well, it's lovely and tropical here as I sit on my decking with a mojito in one hand and the sun lashing down on my brown face on the other. Not. It's Baltic, as always. However, we have 7 or 8 minutes of cognitive neuroscience to float your boat, so I hope that is a good substitute. If you are really interested in cognitive neuroscience, then may I suggest reading Michael Gazzaniga. It's a superb starting point, as is following Professor Vin Walsh and Professor Dorothy Bishop on Twitter. Susan Greenfield and her new book. I'll leave that one up to you. Not sure I'll be buying it. Okay, so Nashter, as always, you owe me once more. 2009, Montalcino, thank you, that'll do me fine. Okay, so my name's Mark Keeley, I'm a deputy head teacher and I teach psychology. I've been taught for the last 24 years in Hong Kong, Abu Dhabi, from Prus to residential to mainstream to private school, so fairly wide experience. And I love psychology, but in planning this, I ask myself a quick question. Where do the boundaries lie between cognitive psychology and cognitive neuroscience? Now, to answer that would necessitate a definition and a comparison of each. So as not to engender what Seligman might call learned helplessness, I shall leave that away learning task to you. What a wonderful name. Away learning. Yep, we're really going to fool the kids by calling it away learning and not homework. Not. Okay, George Miller coined this term, cognitive neuroscience, in the 70s, but what was the purpose of this new study? Well, let's examine a few topics and a few areas of study that may help us understand how this wonderful, wonderful world of cognitive neuroscience can shed light into what we do in the classroom. Electrical and magnetic brain recordings and mental chronometry. Neural mechanisms for forming a perceptual decision. The problem of coding single cells and neuronal populations. If you're any clearer, you're a better person than I am. Now, we'll try something different then, shall we? Cognitive neuroscience helps us to understand how the human brain supports thought, perception, affection, action, social process and other aspects of cognition and behaviour, including how such processes develop and change in the brain over time. Sounds good. Getting hopeful. So, Aisnik and Kane, they've even told us that it allows us to obtain detailed information about the brain structures involved in different kinds of cognitive processing. Sounds a bit more helpful. Of course we want to be interested in cognitive processing. What is education if it's not cognitive enhancement? So we're getting places. Next stop, let's go to the Royal Society and their Brainwaves Module 2, 2011. I'm going to read out a few headlines, a few key insights, as they call it, in terms of neuroscience and its implications for education and lifelong learning. Nature and nurture affect the learning brain. Didn't know that. The brain is plastic. Didn't know that. The brain's response to reward is influenced by expectations and uncertainty. Wow, didn't know that. 4, the brain has mechanisms for self-regulation. Guess you know what's coming now. I didn't know that. Education is a powerful form of cognitive enhancement. Super duper, I never knew that either. And lastly, there are individual differences in learning ability with a basis in the brain. We know this. We know this. Teachers know this. I know this as a psychology teacher. I don't have to be a professor of cognitive neuroscience to know this. But the more important part is, how does this help me operationalize what I do every day, every week, every month, every year? And to be honest, at the moment, I'm not too sure. For example, nature and nurture affect the learning brain. We know the difference a postcode makes to the upbringing of a child and their life at school. What are you telling me that I don't know? I can try and narrow a gap. I don't think I can ever close it in education, but I can certainly narrow it. But can cognitive neuroscience even impact on narrowing that gap at the moment? Not too sure. So I thought I'd ask my friend, Professor Vin Walsh, who's a professor of cognitive neuroscience at UCL. And he knows a lot more about things than me, because he's a professor. And Vin's reply? A good test of neurobabble is whether you can replace the word brain with people or person. If you can, then we haven't really learned anything new from saying brain. In other words, cognitive neuroscience may have helped us debunk nonsense, uninteresting pseudoscience, brain gym learning styles. But how much has it explicitly contributed to how I operationalise decision-making processes in my class? I don't worship on an altar of empiricism and positivism. I love cog psych, but it's not the only lens. Cog neuroscience is not the only lens we look at in learning. When I'm in my flow, as I call it in the class, invariably the decisions that I make and what I do lies at an intersection between art and science. How do I put an empirical lens on intuition, on what I've learned over 24 years, how I react to stressful situations? I respect positivism to post-positivism in science. But there are many, many bits that lie in between. I respect a body of knowledge and skills that have arisen through hundreds of years as a profession, when words like cognitive and psychology and cognitive neuroscience never really existed. I like relying on the intersection of art and intuition and science. So I'm going to finish by referring to Gestalt psychology in terms of understanding how learning and being able to operationalise what we know on a daily basis can contribute to a greater understanding of the learning brain. And it's a very simple statement: the sum of the whole is greater than the parts. Cognitive neuroscience is an important part, and it'll probably grow even more important. But when it talks to all its other cousins, all its other parts like cog psych, social psychology, neuropsychology, sociology, anthropology, then a complexity of understanding will get even stronger. For now, for the meantime, I don't think I'm being cynical. I think I'm being realistic and honest. If we don't really know the answer to how the brain and learning interact to inform our understanding in the classroom and to help us operationalise what we do at a pedagogical level, put our hand up and say, I'm not too sure. That's okay. It's okay to say that. In fact, even asking the question is a step in the right direction if we don't know the answers yet. It's okay. Because as with all learning, you can only make a road of understanding by walking slowly together. And maybe at this stage of cognitive neuroscience, we're at a crawling stage. But like all developmental phases, I'm sure that crawl will turn into a walk, and it'll turn into a faster walk, as long as we head in the right direction. Well, 9 minutes over. Have a great evening, everyone. Really sorry that I couldn't be there to join you. I was going to video this, but because I'm such a Jerry Butler lookalike, Shani said that you guys would get far too excited, so I just thought I'd do the audio stuff. Okay, have a great night. Best wishes, Mark.